Those who have to live with the outcome should really be in charge of the decision.
Welcome to the Power of Respect podcast with Charlie Likewise, author of the book, The Power of Respect in Business. Charlie is one of America's foremost authorities on respect and leadership development. And now, here's Charlie.
Welcome to the Power of Respect podcast. I'm very excited to welcome again my guest today, Torsten Peiper. We talked before regarding respect and the impact of respect on family businesses and how it helped us manage change and managing risk in terms of the changes that go on in the business. Torsten is one of the world's leading experts on family business. He's an associate professor of management at the Bell College of Business at the University of North Carolina in Charlotte. He also serves as visiting professor with the Family Enterprise Center of the Keenan Flagler Business School at University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. He's president of the International Family Enterprise Center and president of the International Family Enterprise Research Academy, which is the largest association of family business research in the world. Perhaps his most important area of expertise and why we appreciate him on this show for these discussions comes from the fact that Torsten grew up in a multinational family business where he learned family business from the ground up. Today, we're going to be discussing the impact and power of respect as it relates to family businesses, in particular relating to succession planning and transition, which is a key element of risk to be managed in family businesses. Welcome, Torsten.
Thank you very much, Charlie. It's good to be back, and thanks for having me.
So as we said before, you know, we talked about respect and the impact on relationships and how that was a necessary component to help manage change in a positive way to move forward. And also it strikes me as it allows us to be able to expand our appetite for risk and understanding how to make decisions in risky situations. And in family businesses, clearly, you know, the family nature of the management and ownership has certainly unique elements when it comes to deciding how to create succession planning and or family transitions. So I'd like to get your perspective and some examples on that today, if you would.
Absolutely, be happy to, yes. Succession is of course a big topic in family business. It's something that's on many people's mind when you ask entrepreneurs, family business owners, managers, what their goal is in their life. They often tell you, "But I want to transmit this business to my children." That's really telling you something how important this is. Now we also know that about a third of only about a third of family business make it from one generation to another. Right, and that percentage there of 33% is pretty stable also across cultures and continents. So it means that only a third of all companies that make it second to the third. It's another second generation to the third generation. You multiply that with another third, so you're just shy of 10%, and then if you go further, you go very quickly down to just around 3%. Right? So, however, you also need to see these figures in perspective, and that's something that's often irritating when people use these statistics. You really have to see it in comparison to all businesses, period. And there, it's just a matter of fact that a lot of businesses don't make it. It's Schumpeterian creative destruction. Many companies are started, and after a few years they close down again because it doesn't work, or the idea wasn't that great, or somebody else comes around, outcompetes them. So this fact that companies don't survive long term is just applying to a lot of businesses out there, regardless if they're family business or not. Now, if you take a step further and you look at which are the oldest the oldest businesses that are still around today, And I often do this as a challenge to my students, right? In class. I take a $20 bill and put it on the desk and say, here's $20. Go and find a company that is older than 150 years and that's still in operation today. If it's not a family business, the $20 are yours. And so far, I never had to give out those $20, right? Because families give organizations an element of longevity that is just unmatched by other organizations. So family has something that gives an element of longevity that is pretty unique, right? And when you see some of these really old family businesses, I studied some of them as part of my dissertation back in Germany, companies that are 300 or so years old. That's a beautiful thing to see, right? It's pretty remarkable, really, yes. Oftentimes too, these companies go through remarkable changes, and what they started out with resembles nothing of what they are today, right? So this notion of adjusting as you go through time is also something that's really, really remarkable, right? And that's not easy to be able to give up something that the ancestors created and were obviously very, you know, proud, successful about, and you are the one coming in and changing this. That has to do with respect, right, to your point, and to be able to, yes, continue what it is that we are doing in a way that keeps our family involved and engaged, but does something that, well, our customers and the markets will and our suppliers and various other stakeholders will appreciate as well, right? And that does require change. And I think not being willing to change, or also not allowing change, is perhaps also something that sometimes costs the life of some family businesses or businesses in general.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, it's interesting when I think about the necessary change, when I think about the entrepreneurial spirit of those who started a business, family or otherwise, but to get a family. And, you know, they had a vision and they had a skill or an understanding of how to do something to meet needs at the time. When those needs change, changing with those needs can be difficult. Yep. It's sometimes hard to let go. I've talked to people before and I said, you know, family-owned businesses are frequently referred to as privately held. And I said, the key word there is private. And so understanding that nature of the mindset of the founders of those businesses and the nature of the privacy, how do you break that veil with the right trust and the right respect? And again, I think respect comes before trust, but in order to be able to have trust. And so I think that's a very important element of how eventually those changes can take place, because there's risk involved. And some people don't have the appetite for risk that others might have. Others also may have what I call NIH disease, not invented here syndrome. and those are two different things. So just focusing on the fear of change is where I think respect can have a powerful impact on improvement.
Absolutely. And it's also about about having a culture that lets you experiment, right? Because I say in the other podcast we were talking about, well, not being able to predict the future, and on top of that, living in extremely uncertain times and uncertainty being a totally different animal than risk, right? Which is probably a topic for another podcast. But yes, that having a culture that lets you experiment, right? But also, what it requires is you have to be able to create a culture and an atmosphere or an orientation where people are able to believe that they can recover from failure, See, that's the thing. See, if we all believe that we can recover from failure, well, then let's do it. But if you do not have that mindset, well, that's when people go, let's not do that because that's just not right. That's just too big of a risk. Well, look, if we can recover from it, well, let's give it a try. Of course, a good recipe for surviving is not killing yourself. Right? So now being able to make those, to do these experiments and see, well, maybe is this a market we should go in? Is this a product we should test? Right? Being able to test drive these ideas without blowing up your entire company, that requires, that's a German term, Fingerspitzengefühl. It requires a lot of nuance and fingertip feeling, right?
Feel, touch, yeah.
Exactly, yes. But I think key to that is that you have to be able to feel as a group, and that means as an ownership group, as a family group, that we can recover, we can get through this if we stick together. And if we don't stick together, right, then we are not gonna make it. That's why this notion of togetherness and cohesion is so important, especially in families, because we are much, much stronger if we are in a group than if we go our separate parts. Well, that requires, again, respect, because it might be that we have some people in the group who are just not compatible with one another from the outset, but still, well, we share the same blood, or they're still members of the family. And we somehow need to make it work, right? So now maybe I have to overcome my ego and do certain things that let that happen for the benefit of everybody else. And I put my needs and my egotistic desires to the side, really for the benefit of the group. And that has to do a lot with respect, let's say, and sometimes perhaps also giving other people the benefit of the doubt and thinking again, looking at things from a different perspective.
I think that gets at the concept of managing expectations as well. When I think about, we happen to have in our family a family property that's been in the family for 100 years. So when it was the first family involved, it was just them and use of it. And what was done there was the decision of one family. As you go through generations, expand, and then there's children, then there's grandchildren. And pretty soon, instead of having one family and maybe two parents making decisions, now you have seven families.
Yes, that's right.
If you will, making decisions or wanting to make decisions or wanting to have, they have expectations about that property or its use or what they'd like to see some. It's a lot harder to bring that group together. And as we talked about before with relationships, if you don't have the relationship to be able to have that conversation in a respectful, valid way, it would be a disaster.
You're right. Yeah, exactly right. Yes.
And it may end up people throw up their hands or they sell the property when that's an unfortunate thing to do, et cetera. But those expectations. So, from your perspective, the managing expectations aspect of succession planning and transition, I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Yes. There's one rule that, or guideline that my good friend and colleague Joe Estokan has with succession, but really with decision making in general, which is those who have to live with the outcome should really be in charge of the decision. Which means for succession, well, look, next gen, it's you are up. It's your decision, right? Because you have to live with it, right? Hopefully, we're gonna be speaking from the perspective of the older generation. We'll hopefully have a nice and long life to see this all, but we're closer toward the end than to the beginning, biologically. So you're gonna drive this bus, and since you're gonna be living with the decisions, you should be in charge. Now again, that requires respect to first of all yourself, and to be able to accept that things may be looking very, very differently and you being okay with it. But also, respecting alternative perspectives and even if they are drastically different. There's an example that comes to mind. Everybody knows them. That's why people can relate to it, I believe. The Rockefeller family, one of the once wealthiest families in this country, but still today highly, highly influential. Well, the next generation comes in and they decide to divest all of their holdings of fossil resources and to reinvest, I think, a pretty ambitious goal by 2025 or maybe toward the end of the 20s, to be 100% in sustainable renewable energies. Now think about it. This is a family that has made its fortune with oil and non-renewable resources. And you have this next generation coming in saying, we don't identify with it anymore. It's not who we are. That's not perhaps what we used to be, right? But this is not who we are. So let's change it. And you see, I mean, this has respect all over. Yes, I mean, to say, we respect what our ancestors have done, but and we value that, right? But we decide as next gen to go into a different business model that fits better, that aligns better with our values, our goals, and our mission. And this is something that's remarkable to see about some families where over time they develop a mindset where they really orient themselves toward the family and not so much about the business. And again, this is a little bit counterintuitive because usually, you know, all the people out there, they, you know, and the public opinion too, they go, well, the business has to be the golden goose, right? And if the family is, however, number one, then you have all these nepotistic tendencies and, you know, the family milking the business, like it would milk a cow until it falls over. So really, that's not a good policy. Well, if it is mismanaged or misinterpreted in that way, that's true. That's not good management. But these families who take the family as the golden goose, they go take a step further in that they are very, very conscious of their role and the responsibility that they have toward keeping the family together, right, and accomplishing something that is important to them, and using the business as a tool to accomplish that mission. Of course, there has to be something noble and worthwhile. Otherwise, it cannot just be, well, we want to be rich and retire in the Bahamas. That's not a good, compelling goal. But we do see families do that and then manage the businesses in an extremely professional, ethical, sustainable way because they see this is part of our responsibility. But at the end of the day, the business is just a vehicle. And if you take that orientation and apply it to the Rockefellers, it makes perfect sense to say, look, as long as you achieve whatever you want to achieve as a family, if it's not oil and gas and railroads, pick something else, especially if it suits your goals better and aligns better and gives you the opportunity to have more fun together, by all means, do it, right? Because we are now, again, coming back to respect. I respect, right, that we want to continue as a group and as a family, and the business is just a tool. So if you want to replace those, yes, they're absolutely substitutable because they're just vehicles to accomplish something that is much, much more meaningful. I will share a story with you. I met many years ago at a conference that the Family Business Network organized next to a couple from Japan. Very nice, wonderful people. And we started to talk and I asked them about the business. And they were, I think, the 13th or 14th generation. And I asked them what they do. And I remember they said, our goal is to go into the history as the family that reforested the Japanese peninsula. And I was like, wow. So still today, I find it remarkable. And they said, and we have in our bunch of businesses, container shipping, pharmaceuticals, you know, trading, computer, you know, anything. But really, those are just helping us to create the resources so we can plant trees, because this is really what we want to do. Now, that's a compelling mission, right? Which for that family is exactly what they want. Now, there are some others who go, this is not my cup of tea. Well, that's fine. But pick that, find that that goal, that objective, right?
Purpose.
Your purpose, exactly. That gives you meaning, and then go after it. Because then people will, and they have to create this mindset that it's important for everybody in the family. Like with your example, with your shared property there. But everybody, it's apparently important to everybody. So everybody is willing to, well, make it work, make compromises, find arrangements so you can preserve it in the family. Because, of course, the simplest thing is to sell it and everybody buys their own little properties, but then you lose that, right? You lose that connection to the land and the heritage and the legacy, which obviously is very important to you all.
Right. It's interesting, as I listen to your conversation here, it's not just about respect for the people that work in your organization, or you know, what you can do with their money. It's about respect for what the family stands for.
You're right.
Well, and that's a very important concept that I'm taking away from this conversation. And that concept can potentially bring people together to a more common purpose versus the individual.
See, and then also people will, from outside of your group, they will join you. They will get fascinated and they will root for you and support you, and you will see that you will get fans and supporters from places that you hadn't even thought about, because it is something that gives others meaning too. Now organizations try to do, businesses try to do that too with whatever missions they have, but in many cases you look at those and you go, yeah, but maybe this is what you write on in your headquarters in golden letters because it looks fancy and it sounds really nice, but your actions are the exact opposite. And nothing of what you practice is really aligned with what you say your mission would be, right? So you have to also then work really hard to make sure that you preserve your integrity and that you do what you said you were going to do. And that you live up to that, to those standards and to that purpose. Yep. And that's, yeah, respecting what it is that your word, but also your commitment and your responsibility. Yep. And the people who are concerned by it. Yes.
Oh, absolutely. And the communities in which you dwell as well.
Yes.
And that they belong with them. I want to just finish off with a little bit of discussion on the transition from being part of management or running the business to stepping out. So you want the legacy of the business to continue. You're not saying I'm going to sell it. The issues that go along with, okay, I've been running this business for 20 years. Now it's time for me to turn it over to either a younger generation or even perhaps an outside professional manager, but the family still owns the business. That transition is also tends to be a difficult one that needs an examination of how do we communicate going forward in that scenario.
You're absolutely right. And that's often an option that I think family businesses do not consider often enough. They think if you want to be a family business, someone of the family has to be in charge of management or be operationally actively involved. That's not the case. There are many family businesses where that's not the case, where the family owns the company, and yes, they occupy seats on the board of directors because they want to very much to see what's happening, but they are not actively involved in management, and they hire the very smart managers who run the company on their behalf. The challenge with that is that first of all, I have to realize that, you know, being an owner comes with a lot of rights, but also responsibilities. And I think Smith Lanier was known to say, when owners start to talk about their rights rather than their responsibilities, the family business is in trouble. So a lot of responsibility, which means that even as owners, right, we want to be active and we want to be educated, and we need to do things in a way that we stay engaged with the business, although we are not operationally involved in management or so. So then, of course, the board of directors is one way we can do that. But also, we see a lot of families then investing a lot of resources and effort into having really smart next generation owners in the group, right? Where everybody, regardless of what it is that you do in your life, but look, you have to at least have a basic level of business acumen to be fulfilling your duties as an owner. It's like, Joe Estrakhan, I learned this from him. He often asks owners or in these conversations, how many of you have a pool at home or live by the water? But give me a sign of hands here. And then, of course, many people would raise their hands. And then he would go on and say, well, I hope you taught your children how to swim. And then you look their faces, right? Because then they go, oh. See, it's the same with being an owner. If you do not educate and prepare someone for their roles, it's not a question of if something bad is going to happen. It's just a question of when. I'm sure there's many countless really unfortunate cases. Yeah, where you know, family members got into incredible amount of wealth and lost it all, or even worse, developed some issues with substance abuse or even suicide or something like that. There's a lot of bad stuff that can happen because there's so much that comes from it. You really need to to learn to swim, right? You really have to know it, otherwise it can be disastrous. And what this means too is, well, now how do you teach someone to swim? You don't put your child in the pool next to you and say, watch me do these beautiful laps here, and now let me do this. See, this is how you swim. That's not teaching, right? And educating, it's really doing it, meaning you have to, prepare these folks from the family businesses who do this really well, start at a very early age on to educate them what it means to be a member of this family business, to instill the values in the business, teach them respect, self-esteem, right? And then later on, some family businesses have an owner's academy where they go through, right? They come together for four or five days. They spend a lot of fun together, but they also go through a specific curriculum where they are taught, how do you read a balance sheet? How do you make sense out of basic financial ratios, right? What is strategy? How do you go about defining strategy and competing? So everybody is smart. And if you are an opera singer in Paris or an electrician in Brisbane, Australia, or a teacher in New York, everybody has the same level of basic understanding and everybody is smart enough. That of all of a sudden gives you an ownership group who know what you are talking about as a manager, but they can also question and challenge you. And they are not just the type who sit on the sofa at home and wait until the check from the trust fund comes in, and so they can throw more parties and have more friends over and do ridiculous things, right? So yes, a lot of, again, it has to do with a lot of respect, requires a lot of hard work, a lot of resources, but it's important and it's meaningful work.
I think that you're absolutely right in those observations, and smart people in general can recite the what of anything, till the cows come home. The how is a different matter. And I think that, you know, respect is one of the key areas that really can begin to help people understand the how that goes with the what and the why. Yeah. You know, nothing against Simon Sinek, but I think that it's not just the why.
You're right.
The how is the glue that holds those two together.
So, exactly.
I think that's important. I want to thank my guest, Torsten Piper, today for being with us again. And I especially want to thank you, the audience, for listening to the episode of Power of Respect. If you like what you've heard, please consider sharing the podcast and visit our website at expertsinhow.com. And if you'd like to read my book, The Power of Respect in Business, it's available on Amazon. Thanks again for listening. And remember, respect builds trust. Trust builds relationships, which is the hallmark of leadership. Thank you all.
This has been the Power of Respect podcast with Charlie Likewise, author of the book, The Power of Respect in Business. To listen to more episodes and to learn about Charlie's leadership development programs, visit his website, expertsinhow.com.